Welcome to another episode of the Find Your Strong podcast with me, Christine Chessman. I feel like I have to say Chessman, not Cheeseman, every single week. Today we have got a corker. I usually say treat. Today I'm saying a corker. And that is in the form of stress ownership coach and educator, Maddie Snow. Now, I had the absolute pleasure of working with Maddie for about 8 weeks. And it was an absolute game changer for me. And I was so keen to get her on the podcast and just share her wisdom with all of you. So without further delay, I'm going to hand the floor over to you, Maddie. So talk to me. How are you getting on today? How's life in general? Tell me everything.
Oh, everything. It's going to take some time. Yeah. No, things are good. I'm in Nashville, Tennessee. So it's a little unseasonably warm here. It's like 80 degrees Fahrenheit, which is up there. So Yes, it's summer temperatures right now with that global warming events. So it's been a little bit, but other than that, can't complain. It's been really nice.
So. I can't. We've had this conversation before. I am very happy in winter, even though I get very cold. I cannot stand when it gets too hot. So the fact that it's already hot with you guys,
absolutely. And I thought about you the other day when it was when it was really hot, because I was getting very irritable and very agitated, very very short on patience. And I started noticing it and thinking, like, this is a stressor, heat, and we'll get into it, but heat is your brain does not compartmentalize between physical and emotional stressors. And heat is a huge physical stressor. And so that's why people start acting crazy in summer. Sometimes you'll see on the really hot days, we'll see increase in like either violence or crime. People get very short tempered. And it increases anxiety because your body is sensing that there's stress in the environment. And so if you have mental stress as well, that just compounds it.
And I think, women of a certain age, the heat rises, doesn't it? So certainly according to your cycle, if you're perimenopausal, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So it's, the struggle is real. But on that note, I think other people really struggle in winter with the kind of seasonal SAD, the sort of seasonal depression that is very, very common, because the lack of light and just sort of more time indoors and not as much time socializing. So it goes both ways, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. It absolutely does. And I think I have an episode that I made on my podcast last year on seasonal affective disorder, because some of it is the direct, relationship with the sunlight that we're not getting. And some of it is that we have put so many walls between us and the natural world that we don't even realize it's coming until it smacks us in the face. And so you don't see the light decreasing. You don't see these things happening. And so then it's almost like you're resisting this natural course, that this natural cycle throughout the year. So just kind of in the episode, I kind of talked about ways of starting to shift yourself so that you see that a little bit more than making it more of an aggressive, surprising thing that happens. And now it's dark really early, kind of, which can be really upsetting.
Yeah. And a little side note there for everybody. Maddie is the host of the Own Your Stress podcast, which I think you're 11 episodes in now, Maddie.
I think so.
I've listened to every single one at least twice.
I'm so glad. Thank you.
I urge you, if you're listening and are sort of finding it hard to manage work-life stress, I urge you to go find the podcast and check it out. I'll put all of the details in the show notes. But Maddie, I want you to define for us the difference between, because this is something we chatted about, the difference between stress management and stress ownership. So, because there's a lot of stress management coaches out there. So what sets you apart?
Right.
So in that way.
I'm glad you asked, because so my background is in pathology and psychology. I have a master's degree in pathology, so I'm very well versed in the normal and abnormal anatomy and physiology of the human body. And then I also have a degree in psychology, lots of coach training, and I've worked in mental health. So essentially, when I was still working in healthcare, I was in healthcare for about a decade. When I was still working in healthcare, I saw stress in different, in component pieces. I understood it in component pieces. And so I feel like when we look at stress management, we're looking at something that stress is separate from us, that we're trying mm-hmm. to suppress it, that it is coming to get us. And so the best we can do is, it's almost like this unruly employee, the toxic employee in the workplace that you're trying to yeah. manage. Yeah. You're saying, yes, like it's resonating. That is kind of how I feel about stress management. So when we talk about stress ownership, it was a word that resonated with me as I started getting more into coaching and teaching stress and looking at it as a big picture where our brains and bodies, they are ours. They are part of us. And stress is not a bad thing. It's a very mm-hmm. normal thing. And so most of which we don't even necessarily notice throughout the day. And so when we're working towards stress ownership, we're making it part of us again and understanding that we can take radical responsibility for how our nervous system interacts with the world and how we treat our nervous system and our brain and body, and that they aren't out to sabotage us or be the enemy. We're not going to battle with ourselves every day and finding ways to really take ownership back, really, because I think that there's a lot of language out there that makes it seem as if we are at odds with ourselves at all times and we're our own worst enemy. So I felt like ownership was something that felt like I was taking it back, and my clients were able to take back that part of them.
And it's, that's a massive shift. And it's definitely one that through working with you that mm-hmm. I've always seen stress. I've always kind of attached a negative mindset to stress. I've always sort of, I don't know, if I say I'm really stressed, that's always mm-hmm. in a really negative way. I never mean, oh, I've got a lot going on and it's a natural mm-hmm. process that I think I got to a place where I wasn't allowing the stress. So it's almost really empowering to own your stress, to allow mm-hmm. it and to be a bit more self-compassionate and just, not beat yourself up every time you yes. feel stress and think, oh, I should be calm. It's mm-hmm. it's actually okay. And life is difficult. Life is stressful. There are external stressors all around us.
Yes.
And to just walk through life calm as a cucumber constantly would be quite impossible. And I think I've always really felt I should be able to manage things better. I should be able to do things better. And to think about it as part of me and as actually, it's just how your nervous system's responding to different mm-hmm. situations, that helped me so much. Mm. And I think that it's that tiny, even stress management, stress ownership, that just makes all the difference, doesn't it?
I'm so glad to hear you say that, because it felt that way to me. And I wanted it to resonate with others. So I'm really glad that it does. And you're 100% right. There is almost this narrative of like, the stress is big and I can't handle it, so I'm going to yeah. try to make it smaller
yeah.
and figure out how to squelch it. And it's ours. We will survive it. Like, it's part of us. It's not something that's happening to us. And yes, exactly. Like, it's those waves of stress. You can ride them. They can get real big,
mm-hmm.
but you can understand where they're coming from and how you can mitigate the process rather than attempting to suppress, which is always going to end up in some kind of nuclear explosion.
And, this might be something that is just impossible to do, but if I were to sort of give you a scenario, so I work with women kind of mm-hmm. 35 plus, and mm-hmm. we work around sort of building strength, embracing our bodies, taking up space, all of that. But a lot of the women, all of that, as if that's a lot, that's great. a lot of the women that I work with, work full time, they have young children, they have ailing parents. And it's, life is quite stressful, obviously, with the recession, with, the cost of living has increased shockingly to a shocking degree.
Oh, yeah.
And, I certainly am talking from a privileged position in that we can afford to have a roof over our heads and be comfortable. And so many people can't. But what would you say to somebody who's in that age group where they're possibly caring for parents, they're caring for kids, they're working full time, they have limited time for themselves? There are stressors which they cannot pick out of their lives, what would be the first thing you'd sort of talk to them about if they were to come to you?
I would probably talk about how stress is a cumulative process. So we think that individual stressors are what's breaking us, or we think that these individual burdens are insurmountable. What happens is it is the accumulation of all of those challenges that don't have solutions. Our human brains are very much made for solutions. Like, we love, that's why it feels so good to make something. You know, if we craft something and can see a finished product, if you can check something off the list, you feel this relief because it feels really good. We are made to be like nomadic hunter gatherers. You know, we pick the berries, we eat the berries. And that is not the world we live in. There are so many everyday stressors that have no defined ending. And so rather than looking at each of those and saying, how do I take these off my plate? Looking for micro moments throughout the day where you can pause and take a deep breath and say something to yourself about how you are capable of navigating these stressors. They are big, they are bad, but humanity is still here and we have navigated.
Yes.
I mean, we are tens of thousands of years old at this point. And so we do tend to make, as we've grown, we've made our lives way more complex and dynamic. And so understanding that you do not need to solve any one problem today in this moment, it is not all on you. Step back, count your resources, and take a deep breath. And that itself can help engage your parasympathetic nervous system, your rest and digest is what they typically call it, versus fight or flight. And so when we're staying in these big stressors and never giving ourselves a moment, even as I say, a micro moment, only a couple minutes, when we're only staying in the big stressors, we're staying in this fight or flight place. And that's where that accumulation comes from. If you can give yourself small moments and set an alarm even, or if you start recognizing that things are getting overwhelming, there will be a tendency to dig in more and dive in more, using that as a signal to actually do the opposite and pull back and have a moment. And two exercises that are fantastic. One, stretching your arms over your head. I am no kind of yoga person. I just, you know, I don't do all of the tree crab and the sunrise fish. Whatever there is, you don't know them, but stretching your arms overhead for a minute and taking a deep breath, and then also using your peripheral vision. So if you look straight ahead and you kind of, right now I'm looking at you, but there is a fiddly fig to my left that I can see in my peripheral vision. And so engaging that peripheral vision and stretching are two things that activate that rest and digest system. And so if you just do those for a couple minute or two and then get back into things, it'll actually downshift. You'll start feeling less urgent. It'll feel, I kind of frame it as like, things feel less important when I get back to them. They're still important. Yeah. But it's like, where did that screaming go? And that screaming is your parasympathetic, whatever you experience it as, tightness or screaming, or that's your sympathetic nervous system, your fight or flight. So occasionally engaging that, no matter, that can be enough to kind of give you space and to start seeing things a little bit more clearly.
And you have a wonderful knack of, on your Instagram, of posting these beautiful photographs of like whales swimming or dolphins jumping, or, and I think I find one from you, which is these beautiful polar bears. Called it's wildlife or something, and they're just rolling around in these gorgeous flowers, and it's just so, and it just takes you away for a minute, you know, it just takes you away from what you're dealing with and the stress around you. And it is, and I think it's so powerful, but it's something that you can get lost in work and in life and just not take the time. And you know, I live right by the sea. I'm literally a stone's throw from the sea. But I can go a week without going down to the sea and going to the beach. I can just, you know, and just ignore it. Whereas if I took that 10 minutes and just sat on the beach, you know, that would give you that peripheral vision and that sort of looking out. But
absolutely, you know,
that that lens. But it's just fascinating to me. So how would you then? I feel like you should invoice me for this. I'm getting so much out of it. What would you do if, so for me, example, I had the 8 weeks with you, which was life-changing, but very slowly old habits creep back in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I need to really take myself in hand. But how would you, are things like setting timers or things like, what? How can we really, even when we're kind of in the middle of a lot of work, et cetera, or a lot of things going on, how can we keep reminding ourselves to take that minute and take that time throughout the day?
I use timers for myself. Yeah, I use alarms. The alarms started as a way to remind myself to eat, because as someone who has disordered eating patterns in the past, I, I think we can all relate on some level. And also having worked in medicine, you put all of your needs secondary until you've eventually trained yourself not to recognize when you have to pee. You don't recognize when you are thirsty or hungry. And so when I left medicine, I realized I didn't really have hunger cues. I got frustrated, stressed, and overwhelmed, and then realized I hadn't eaten for, you know, hours on end. So then I started introducing timers to make sure that every 3 hours I'm eating either a meal or a snack. 2 to 3 hours is generally enough time for me to get something done. And it varies for everybody, but that's generally enough time where my brain will start wandering. I'll start scrolling Instagram, that kind of stuff. So if an alarm goes off, I can take a minute. Since I work from home now, I'll go outside with the dogs and watch them play a little bit. Yell at them because they're always rolling in something. when I was in medicine, those kind of alarms, which I tried to set when I realized I wasn't eating at work either, and it wasn't helping, I would take a moment and go outside of our unit and just walk up and down the hallway a little bit and change my environment very briefly. But having those alarms for me has been absolutely critical, because I will, I forget, I just head down and just start doing things and kind of slump into. It starts out productive and then I don't know where it goes.
So setting those alarms, that's a cracking tip. But have you found that you've tuned in a little bit more to your sort of hunger cues and needing the toilet, et cetera? Have you now, I mean, even though you've got the timers, do you go, oh, I'm hungry now, or aside from the timers?
Absolutely. And now the timers are more, they keep me aware of time passing versus needing them so much to like have those hunger cues. But yes, I absolutely, now I'm hungry all day long. And it's kind of fantastic because, and I recognize it as fantastic because it was something that I had so often put off to the side as not as important as what I needed to do next. And then I was foggy. I couldn't concentrate. Everything was hard. And it's just, it's interesting how we tell ourselves that we are prioritizing work. And if we were actually prioritizing work, we would be setting ourselves up to be able to work effectively. So it's really just deprioritizing ourselves rather than under this like excuse that it's the work.
And, you know, I think I remember sort of working with you as well. I used to feel quite almost guilty of just reading a book that was not to do with the work that I'm doing at the minute and extra research, etc. So now I'm kind of really making a point of having lots of fiction books. So I've started rereading fiction again.
Oh, that's great.
And it's amazing. But I still have that, oh, but I should work. And then I'm like, no, I'll read for a bit. I'm like, no, I need to. So it's still a little internal battle, but it's, I think just even having the books there and knowing that I'm allowed to take that 5 minutes, and it's more about actually you'll be more productive afterwards. And that's what we don't really think about, is it?
No, right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I had a client not long ago who realized they shifted from, they were thinking that working late was helping. And, you know, they were going to work as late as possible to get as much done as possible. And then they started realizing they weren't set up the next morning they weren't mentally there because, you know, they didn't log off until late. So now the whole morning is kind of wasted. because they're trying to get into the rhythm of things. So instead they shifted to my evenings are to set me up to be ready for tomorrow morning and not put the work aside and not continue grinding on things because it's not the best use of my time. And that's okay. There's other things I can be doing exactly with my time, like whether it's reading fiction or just, you know, kind of coming down for the evening. That's another thing people have trouble with is turning their brains off, and our brains are, they don't go on and off. It's like a dimmer switch, you know, you have to ease them out of the day. It doesn't work to hard stop and then try to go to bed. We have those anxious thoughts that just keep running.
So what would be your kind of wind down before bed? Is it sort of important to have that time without screens?
That is like a huge thing that that everyone says that I do not follow.
I don't either. I don't follow it.
I don't follow. No. So I'm not on my phone, mostly because my wife and I have kind of at a certain time, mostly around dinner time, we put the phones down and the evening is just us spending time together. So that's really why the phone is aside. But we watch TV, and there are certain shows that we enjoy watching for like the last hour of the day. There are certain shows that I have noticed I cannot watch the last hour of the day. They have me, it doesn't even matter what the content is. It's just, if it's too exciting, if it's too much fun, you know, if it's, if I'm learning something, not good to learn something in the last hour of the day. I'm like ruminating and thinking about all, then I'm up writing. So, but we do usually some TV, either a show we've seen before, or something that isn't going to be too energizing for the brain. And then, tea and some dog cuddles. And that's pretty much our consistent. Yeah. Oh, and then always dessert, like some kind of, right now it's Oreos. We've refound Oreos. And like, I do not remember them tasting as good, but
they're so good. I mean, our gerbils were called Oreo and Sprinkles. Not so much being like Oreo. It's just, but it's, I mean, it that's really nice. I love that sort of, we as a family, we sort of gather in the living room in the evening and we always watch a movie together, which, you know, we're hanging on to this because the kids are 13 and 15. It's not going to be long before they're 100%. Not wanting to be near us at all. But it's, I find that really relaxing because if I'm watching, I love Marvel. So we're watching The Avengers last night.
I love a Marvel marathon. Yes.
Oh, it's great because it is just so fantastical. It'll take you out of yourself because there is no reality within it at all.
Yes.
So you can't identify with Iron Man.
Yes. That's you know, a really good point.
And it's not something that's going to bring you back to any sort of stress that's happening. Around and but then I will just go straight to bed without, you know, having half an hour of no screens. But I find I sleep beautifully, so I don't know. And I think do you think it's also having those rigid rules? I think we bring stress to ourselves a lot of the time by worrying about stress. So we worry that we shouldn't be on our screens an hour before bed. So I didn't do that right. And it's the constant sort of beating yourself up. It's that constant shooting over yourself, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think I was talking to somebody the other day about how there's a certain point where information and personal development and everything becomes, you're trying to make yourself run like a computer. Like you're just going to run perfectly and I can put all these codes in and as soon as, and then set go and everything will fall into place. And then if something's out of place, I've done something wrong. What did I do wrong? And, 100%, yes, that's adding an abundance. And I, especially when I started out coaching, there were a lot of things. I also have a mental health diagnosis. I'm a bipolar. I have bipolar disorder. So there's a lot of things that don't necessarily fit perfectly the way that the book says they should. And so part of you sits there and goes, well, does that, oh gosh, well, what does that mean that it doesn't fit? What does it mean that it doesn't work? And truly, after coaching as many people as I have, none of us have the same brain. None of us are working. These are all suggestions and truly looking at anything that is health and wellness related as a suggestion. And does it help? or does it create additional stress? You know, and are you trying to buy all organic and it's overwhelming you and you can't afford it? And now we've taken out of anything that could be healthy and we put you in a place where you're in scarcity and stress, and that's counterintuitive to what we're trying to do.
I mean, that's a huge statement. That sort of the idea that we're trying to seek that perfection and we're not computers and we need to find that what actually works for us personally. And I think I've got a lot of friends that have the sleep app on their phone, and then they wake up and they're told, you slept horribly. You only had 3 hours of sleep. How does that make you feel when you just wake up? You're like, oh, I'm going to feel rubbish all day. So, I don't want to, and it works for some people, but for me, I want nothing to do. That's almost just preempting how I'm going to feel the rest of the day.
And there's a lot to be said for that as well, because our brains, they have this thing called the reticular activating system. And it's basically the filter for our brain, because let's say you're in a crowded room, everybody's saying a bunch of things. If somebody's kind of near you and says your name, you immediately tune into that person. That part of your brain is filtering out all of that other noise because your name is the most important thing when someone's talking to you. And so a lot that also applies to, you know, if you start looking for yellow cars for some reason, all you'll see for the next week are yellow cars. Yes. But it's not that there are more yellow cars. It's that you've told your brain what's important. And so if we tell ourselves, a good example is Mondays are awful, your brain will filter out information to the contrary. It will only filter in what proves Monday is awful, and you will never have a good Monday. Whereas if you say, I'm starting my day off with no sleep, I'm going to be tired all day, I'm not going to get the things done, you'll notice every single point at which you're tired and foggy, but you won't notice the good things that you did that day.
Do you know, that's fascinating, because recently we had what was called Blue Monday. I don't know if the States, you guys had it as well, but it's supposed to be the day of the year that people are most depressed. And they're most off work sick, and they're most, so it's called Blue Monday. And I didn't, lots of people were posting about it. Oh, it's Blue Monday. Here's ways to make yourself feel better. But actually I did the opposite. I just didn't talk about it at all, because I felt, why even put that in people's heads? Because as soon as you know, oh, it's Blue Monday, the most depressing day of the year.
Yeah.
Immediately you start, you know, your brain, it changes, or your perspective changes. It's incredible, isn't it?
It is 100%. Yes, it's absolutely. And that's like, it's supposed to be an evolutionary thing. And it does work really well if you're looking for something. In the house, you know, if you think of the color of that thing, or if you think of something related to it, your brain will filter out everything else in the room and only look at that thing. It's really fascinating. But the exact same thing, you're right, works. And, you know, if you think this isn't going to go well, I'm dreading this, those kind of things, it's going to filter out, every like scowl that you see is going to be because of what you're doing, versus that person could just be having a bad day. It'll be, look what they think of me, or I'm uncomfortable in the gym. This is a big one for me.
That's
been in the past. Yes. Like, I'm uncomfortable in the weight room. And every time, you know, there's a man that comes too close, it's like, look, he's trying to push me out of the way. He's probably not even noticing that I'm there. But that's kind of, you know, when you're filtering that, it becomes a narrative that then affects your next steps, and it affects your stress and how your body responds to things.
I mean, it'd be really good to chat about that a little bit more, because I do find, and this is something that I've even said, I find gyms quite intimidating spaces. And I'm a trainer. So, you know, and I sort of, a lot of my clients are just, they don't enjoy going to the gym. So we do a lot of sort of home workouts and outdoor workouts. But how, is it as simple as that, just to sort of, I guess that would really help if you go into the gym and say, I have every right to be here. Most people are just concerned about their own workouts. I'm not concerned about you. And if you have that mindset, it's going to make it a more pleasant experience, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it can help to ask, in a lot of situations, am I making myself the star of everybody else's narrative? Like, am I making myself unintentionally this, you know, everybody is there to make me feel uncomfortable, or am I uncomfortable and everybody else is there feeling what they're feeling too?
Yes. And it's something that I always say in my classes. I always say, this is your workout, nobody else's, mm-hmm. because nobody cares what you're doing. They care about them. And maybe mm-hmm. they're thinking about, oh, what are other people thinking about me? But nobody's 100%. Actually caring what anybody else is thinking. They're just all thinking, telling themselves a story, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And a couple times I've caught myself, because I zone out sometimes when I'm resting at the gym or something, and I'll catch myself kind of staring off in someone's direction or looking, you know, and it's like when you have like, you know, a resting face that can look not as approachable, I don't know what I'm being perceived as either. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like people are generally, research has shown over and over again, they are generally thinking about themselves. And you have occasionally jerks who are not just thinking about themselves, but it comes back to their own insecurities and issues.
It's such an interesting one, because I was told, I think this person thought you were quite aloof. And it was mm-hmm. because I didn't chat to them in the street, because I felt really shy. And I felt I didn't know if I really knew them. So I was a bit shy, and I didn't. But they thought I was, and it is that mm-hmm. that sort of different perspective, you know, that you can get things so
so wrong. Yeah, absolutely. There are, you know, and it helps to ask what else could be true.
Yeah,
I might be making this like worst case scenario, and if it's causing me stress, if I can imagine a million things that are going to cause me stress, can I imagine one thing that won't?
Yeah,
because it's all creating a story anyway. Can I create a story that makes me more comfortable in this moment rather than one that makes me more less comfortable?
And sometimes the stories that we tell ourselves might have a shred of truth to them, but mm-hmm. the majority of the time mm-hmm. they don't. And I have, you know, I have the daughters coming home and telling me all sorts of things. And she doesn't like me anymore. And she does. And I'm like, oh, did she say that? No, but I'm just sure she doesn't, by the way. So it's a constant. And I think we do that in so many areas of our lives, don't we?
Absolutely. No. And it's a very adaptive thing. Evolutionarily, you want to be able to tune into the rest of the tribe so that you act appropriately, because you want them to take you with them when the saber-toothed tiger comes. You don't want them to be like, oh, I'm going to throw her to the wolves because you know, she doesn't fit in. So the fitting in, the trying to assume other people's narratives and stories and make sure that we're fit, that is an evolutionary adaptation. And then we take it too far when we start creating, we give even more to those stories and those narratives. And now we've created a reality, because your stories and your expectations will create a reality. And it'll look a lot like your expectations.
I mean, Maddie, this is fascinating. I could chat to you all day. I want to ask you one exercise related question, and then I'm going to mm-hmm. have to close off before I chat for another hour. So exercise, I'd love to chat to you about, first of all, how your relationship with movement has changed, because mm-hmm. I see you often posting about when you make it to the gym, and it's really interesting to read how your mood mm-hmm. is when you arrive and how you feel when you leave. Oh, sorry. I think that was me. My phone buzzing in the background. And also, exercise is a stressor on the body. Mm-hmm. So how can we be intuitive about what our body needs? Mm-hmm. So I always tell clients, if they overdo the exercise, it can actually have detrimental effects, kind of the opposite effect than the one that they're searching for, because it is a stressor on the body. And that's not necessarily a negative thing, as we've discussed. Mm-hmm. But how do you navigate that?
Yeah.
That's a big question. It's a big question.
No, it is. It is. And it's personal to everybody. But for me, my relationship with movement has changed significantly post 2020. But even before that, I was somebody who tried to go all in. I would go 5 days, then I would go one day. Then I'd go 5 days, then I wouldn't go at all. And it was incredibly inconsistent. And I was always trying to throw myself in to do the most at all times. And since giving that break in 2020 and then having, you know, no access to gyms or, you know, movement in general, gave me the ability to step back and start asking myself what fit more consistently. And so experimenting mm-hmm. with how many days does make sense for me on a regular basis. I also, my wife and I realized that before we didn't really move between workouts. So we would do an hour, you know, workout when we got there. And then we were sedentary the majority of the time other than that. So adding in the biggest thing was adding in small walks. You know, we have this little mm-hmm. loop out front. So we'll do a little bit of a lunch walk, a little bit of an evening walk, but small movement makes a huge difference.
Yes.
And in our mental health, in our physical health, everything. So for me, scaling back and being more to be consistent with, and knowing that certain seasons will look different. You know, the holidays will look wildly different this season. We actually took a week off this past week. We didn't go to the gym at all because we started noticing our motivation was flagging. We weren't really looking forward. I don't like to say excited because I'm never like, yeah, I'm at the gym. What? You know, there's people who are like, I can't live without it. No, it's not me. But
yeah.
I wasn't looking forward to the movements that I would do when I was there.
Yeah.
And so a lot of time when we started looking, it was because we have been consistent since the beginning of the year. And we've usually traveled by now, you know, we're 60 mm-hmm. days mm-hmm. into the year. And so 60 days, it's stale. It's kind of like boring. And our brains are just like getting demotivated. So taking mm-hmm. that week off was fantastic. And now we're getting back into it and it feels really good. So I think the ability to pull back has been like crucial for me.
And I think also this will show that I'm a fangirl of you, is that the radical honesty that you talked mm-hmm. about in your last podcast, sort of actually looking at your schedule and rather than programming in 4 or 5 days at the gym every week, when you've got quite a large work life home mm-hmm. schedule, you know, being really realistic and thinking, how often am I actually going to be able to make it, rather than, you know, what my brain's saying, I want to go 4 times a week, but how many will I actually get?
Yes, maybe once or twice. You know, absolutely.
And rather than having that high expectation, when you then, in inverted commas, fail and you don't meet mm-hmm. that expectation of yourself, then you feel gutted, you feel dejected, mm-hmm. you feel, rather than sort of going, actually, I'll go twice a week, and then you can make that, and then you feel better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And we can always scale up. We can always build on something.
Yes.
And our brains work better when we aim for something that we are at least 8 out of 10 confidence on.
Yes.
And then build on that rather than constantly stretching and not hitting. Because one more brain fact, our brains designate energy depending on what the proof of the past is. And so if the proof of the past is we aim for 5 and never get there, then we will start getting demotivated and having less energy to even show up at all. Whereas if we show our brains this, I call it like a resume of, look, the last couple of weeks, I've hit it twice a week, then 3, 4, now we build. But aiming too high, we think if we aim higher, then it's a better thing, but it ends up with us more demotivated when we aim too high and consistently can't hit it. But it doesn't mean we'll never hit it. It just means that we have to build that direction, build up instead of knocking ourselves down.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And I teach Coach to 5K running groups. And I always say, they always want to go so fast. And then mm-hmm. they get injured and then they drop out and it's done. I'm like, go slow, go slower than you think you should go. Just go really slow. We can work on the speed once we get that time on our feet and we've practiced it. And I think it's hard for people to do.
Mm-hmm.
They just want to get there now and get there quickly. But actually it's just taking that step back is
Absolutely.
Huge. But Maddie, this has been a joy, but I would love you to tell us a little bit about what you've got coming up, how we can work with you, and where we can find you.
Absolutely. So I am on Instagram all the time. I am Coaching by Maddie, M-A-D-I. I am all over Instagram. My website is Maddie Snow, MaddieSnow.com. And I work with clients one-on-one in my 8-week program where we define stress and sustainable success for, you know, clients, and figure out how we're unintentionally contributing to our own stress. And we break it down over 8 weeks. And then I also am starting to do these stress tools workshops once a month. Yes. So I have one next week. So it'll probably be the week that this comes out. But yes, it's this next one's on motivation and how stress and motivation interplay. And then the following month is going to be the month of April, I think is going to be an overall stress big picture workshop. And those are $27. So those are very affordable. Yeah, super low cost. They are just an hour of recorded, you know, you get your recording and there's also a live lecture on that tool and how you can use it in kind of your stress toolkit. But the one-on-one coaching, 8-week coaching is primarily where I do the most work and I absolutely love it. It's so much fun.
Yeah, I'd highly recommend that 8 weeks of coaching. Absolute game changer for anybody who's considering it. But thank you so much, Maddie, for taking your time. And I'm going to have to get you back on.
I have to do another.
I was the same with my last podcast. I had a lot of other things that I can easily ask you about that are over here that I'm like, oh no, we don't have time. So we shall resume the conversation. But thank you again. And I hope it continues to be lovely weather for you if you want it to.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I'm enjoying the sun for sure.
Yeah. Well, it's 0 degrees over here. So slight difference.
Yeah. I'm done with that.
I know. I know. Yeah. But take care of yourself, Maddie. And thanks again.
Thank you. Bye.